deceived me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles.
Hello listeners, we're back for another edition of Out of This World Radio with your host Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington on 1150 AM. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomena, metaphysics, and also current events and predictions for the coming years in the Seattle area and beyond. We will have only the best psychics, astrologers, and the best people in the world on our program, and I guarantee it'll be the most interesting radio program you've ever listened to, as you will hear information here that you will simply not hear elsewhere. I want to welcome our new friends who I know are listening from Switzerland now. Guten Tag, meine Freund. Today, we are very grateful and honored to have as our guest Dr. Helen Caldicott. She's considered the world's authority on the health effects of nuclear radiation, twice nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. She is the founder of Physicians for Social Responsibility. We have her on the phone now. She's coming to us live from Sydney, Australia. Her website is linked up to the show at www.outofthisworld1150.com. And for more information about Dr. Caldicott and her wonderful work, please see our website and click on Dr. Caldicott's name for today. We'll just have one commercial today because I think what we'll be discussing, we'll be talking about Fukushima, among other things. I believe it's one of the most profound, potentially dangerous environmental disasters this planet has ever faced. I believe that Fukushima is not a Japanese problem. It's actually a worldwide problem. And I believe as humans, as members of the human race, we're all in this together, irregardless of our race, creed, color, or culture. And that we are all children of God, and that the spiritual lesson from Fukushima is that we need to work together to solve it. Toward this end, before today's program, I contacted the governors of Washington, Oregon, California, Alaska, and Hawaii to come on at the end of the show and at least to listen to Dr. what Caldicott had to say. They all said they were too busy, for the exception of Governor Abercrombie from Honolulu, who said he was interested but didn't have time today. And I thank him for his interest. I also asked Prime Minister Clark of British Columbia to come on the show from Canada. But again, she was not interested. We'll be taking call-ins after 3:30 p.m., and I wanted to give out our call-out numbers to the studio. Our number here is 425-373-5527. Or toll-free within Western Washington at 1-888-298-5569. Before we begin, I'd like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including my dear friend Carol, who's been designing my website and providing moral support, and without whose friendship and help, this program would not have been possible. My dear friend Ann Nelson, business professor at Walla Walla Community College. And I'd also like to thank King 5 TV News and the states of Hawaii, Wisconsin, and California for their interest in this program and also in the Fukushima problem. Our upcoming guests include Susan Miller, one of the world's best astrologers, who will be coming to us live from New York City 1 week from today. Mitch Horowitz, the vice president of Penguin Books, who's just published a wonderful book on the psychic virtues of thinking positive. He'll be on the show next month. Major Ed Dames, one of the world's foremost remote viewers, who will be on the show on April 25th. And James Von Prague, one of the world's famous mediums and psychics, who will be on the air with us at the end of September. For more information about these guests, please see our website at www.outofthisworld1150.com. And let's go to our interview with Dr. Caldicott. Are you there, Helen?
Yes.
Oh, good. Good.
Yep.
Well, welcome to Seattle, Dr. Caldicott. You're being heard by probably several hundred thousand people in the Puget Sound in the Seattle area. Our signal also extends into Vancouver, British Columbia, and Victoria, British Columbia. Could you tell us a little bit about how you got interested in the field of nuclear energy and radiation?
Well, when I was a young girl, I grew up in Melbourne, Australia, and I read a book by an Australian author, Devil Shoot, called On the Beach, and it was about a nuclear war that occurred by accident and everyone in the world was killed except people in Melbourne. And, sorry, that's my cell phone going off with church bells. And gradually the radiation moved down to Melbourne and everybody in Melbourne died, and that was the end of life on Earth. And I was very young, a teenager, and I guess I lost my innocence at that time and knew that life was tenuous. Then I went to university, and in first year medical school, age 17, I learned about radiation and mutations in genes causing inherited disease going down through the generations and cancer. And at the time, America and Russia were testing nuclear weapons in the atmosphere, just blanketing the Northern Hemisphere with radioactive fallout. And I couldn't understand for the life of me what these men thought they were doing by irradiating everyone. Mm-hmm. And so that was my interest initially. I did medicine, loved it, and I'm a pediatrician, and my specialty is cystic fibrosis, the most common fatal genetic disease of childhood. One in 25 Caucasians carry the gene. Because I'm of curious disposition, I've always read everything I can find on nuclear weapons and nuclear power, and I was asked to write an article by Arnold Relman, the editor of the New England Journal, about the medical implications of nuclear power. So I did a year of research for that paper, and so therefore I know a lot about the medical implications of nuclear power and war and nuclear war, which could occur tonight.
Very interesting, Dr. Caldicott. I want to thank you for being on the program. I know a lot of people are listening today. And you made a statement here. It was a month or two ago on Coast to Coast National Radio here in the United States, that because of the amount of radiation that's already been released from Fukushima in Japan, that in perhaps six or seven generations, due to the genetic mutations and deformities from the Fukushima radiation, the Japanese could definitely suffer and may not look human.
No, that's not
okay.
Right.
Okay, if you could clarify that, yeah.
Got it wrong.
Okay.
Actually, almost all of Japan now is contaminated with radiation from Fukushima, but about 60,000 square kilometers are heavily contaminated, meaning they should be evacuated. I think 49 million people live within those areas, including Tokyo. Tokyo got a high fallout. 35 million people live in Tokyo. Therefore, because much of the food is radioactive and contaminated and will be for generations, because the radiation concentrates in the food and the rice and the like, and the exposure to millions of people to radiation through their food and externally, there will be epidemics of cancer and leukemia and down the time track genetic diseases. But it's not just from Fukushima, I need to stress. All the radioactive waste that is produced in nuclear power plants, 30 tons a year, has nowhere to be disposed of, and it must be isolated from the environment for a million years, according to the EPA, and you've got 77,000 tons of the stuff in America. Japan's got about 30 or 20,000 tons. I don't know how much Russia and Germany and England and France have, but as the radioactive waste leaches into the environment, which inevitably will, it will then get into water streams and water supplies and bioconcentrate in the food chain by orders of magnitude at each step, like 10 or 100 times in the algae, then in the crustaceans, then in the little fish, then in the big fish, and us. And we stand at the apex of the food chain. In other words, the radioactive elements concentrate most highly in our bodies. And because many of these elements last for hundreds of thousands and a few millions of years, we are contaminating our environment for the rest of time. Most mutations that are caused by radiation in genes cause disease. They may not show up for 20 generations till two recessive genes get together to cause diabetes or cystic fibrosis or the like. Mm-hmm. There are 6,000 genetic diseases now described or more. Cancer is increasing as we increase the background levels of radiation. So what we're doing by fissioning uranium in nuclear reactors and making bombs, incidentally, we are producing random compulsory genetic engineering for the rest of time, which is almost beyond comprehension.
That's a very profound and sobering thought, Dr. Caldicott. As you know, the tens of thousands of gallons of radioactive water is being dumped into the Pacific daily by TEPCO, the Tokyo Electric Power Company in Japan. Have you talked to your colleagues about what can be done about Fukushima other than just the Japanese don't seem to have any plans for curtailing the radioactive water that's being dumped into the ocean?
I've talked to engineers about this problem. I think I need to go into what's happening in Fukushima so people understand. General Electric built the reactors, GE Mark 1 reactors. You've got, I think, 23 in America. Excuse me, a similar design. And they excavated a hill, and the reactors now sit at sea level on an ancient riverbed. Behind the reactors are mountains. And so when the reactors were operating normally, hundreds of tons of water flowed down from the mountains beneath the reactors and into the sea daily. But because there have been three meltdowns of units 1, 2, and 3, each about 100 tons of uranium and a highly radioactive fission product, these coriums or masses of radioactive material have melted their way through 6 inches of steel, probably through large quantities of concrete and steel, and probably have deposited in the earth. It's called, by the nuclear industry, the melt through to China syndrome. Even if they didn't enter the earth and they're still on the floor of the containment vessel, there are so many cracks and leakages, and what is happening is that the water from the mountains is now pouring down over the molten cores, the coriums they're called. They're sort of larval-like masses, and it's pouring out into the sea. So 300 to 400 tons of radioactive water, which is getting more radioactive by the day, incidentally, are pouring into the sea daily and have been for the last 3 years since the accident occurred. There's really very little way they could stop that radioactive water entering the Pacific, except there is a thought that they could build a wall of zeolite, which is sort of clay-like material, way beyond the reactors near the mountains, and divert the mountainous water before it enters the radioactive zone of the molten cores, and divert it by pipes, etc., into the Pacific before it becomes radioactive. That's a massive undertaking. Certainly the Japanese government is not going to do it. TEPCO is trying to save money and also needs to get its share prices up. It's running out of workers, 3,000 they need every day to try and maintain these dreadfully damaged reactors. They're now recruiting people from the streets of Tokyo, homeless people, hungry people, mentally retarded people, using Yakuza, which is the Japanese mafia. They're running out of human bodies to operate the plant because everyone's getting their maximum doses of radiation. Some people are already dying of radiation illness. So the situation is catastrophic, ongoing, and I feel may never be recoverable. The other thing is that all of the units were severely damaged by the earthquake, but particularly Building 3 and 4. Building 3 is very damaged. If an earthquake greater than 7 on the Richter scale occurred, Building 3 could collapse onto its molten core and release huge amounts of radiation. Building 4 is similarly damaged and tilting. And on the top of Building 4, 100 feet above the ground, is a huge cooling pool full of radioactive waste, about 200 tons. And if that building collapses, down will come the cooling pool, the water will drain out, leaving radioactive material, which will, over about 10 days, catch fire and burn, releasing 10 times more radiation than, or cesium than was released at Chernobyl, the equivalent of 1,400 Hiroshima bombs. So, and that will seriously contaminate the Northern Hemisphere, but also it will could make, you know, much of Japan absolutely uninhabitable. And that could occur, that earthquake could occur any time, because Japan is an island of earthquakes. So things are very grim. And the world is not covering this. The international media on the whole is ignoring it. And I think one of the reasons they can get away with this is that it takes 2 to 80 years to develop a cancer once you've been exposed to radiation, or once you've eaten radioactive food, which stays in your body for years and years, the radiating cells. So it's what, that's what's called the latent period of carcinogenesis, the incubation time for cancer. And when a cancer arises, it doesn't denote its origin. It doesn't say, I was made by some cesium radiation in some fish 20 years ago. And so that's the sort of ace up the sleeve that the nuclear industry has, and the ignorant journalists say, well, no one died at Fukushima. Like, no one died at Chernobyl. Well, up to 1 million people now have died as a result of Chernobyl. And, you know, it's already about 75 children in Japan have confirmed or suspected thyroid cancer, which is an extremely rare cancer. Children are very sensitive to radiation. And so we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg now about what it will almost certainly occur in the future.
I'd like to thank you so much for giving us this information, Dr. Caldicott. It's true, the international media has been ignoring it, and you don't often, you find stories about Fukushima here in the press, but I'll give you an example of one story that came out. It was about a month ago. There was a visiting scientist here named Ken Bessler. He's from the Woods Hole Institute in Massachusetts. I'm sure he's a good scientist. But he said that there was a radioactive plume of water. It's taken 3 years to get here. It'll be coming on the shores of Washington. I believe it's coming. It's probably there already. But no one's doing any testing for it here. It's not like the state of Washington doesn't have the facilities. They do have the facilities, but they're simply not testing for it. Actually, last year, the Obama administration, they had 8 air monitoring stations here in the West, including Washington State. And believe it or not, they were ordered by the EPA in Washington, D.C. to shut down those air monitoring stations, so there's no air testing now. It's not as if we don't have the scientists. We do have the scientists. It's not as if we don't have the laboratories. We have the laboratories. And we taxpayers, we citizens of the United States, paid for these facilities, but yet our government leaders refuse to do any testing. As you know, I did some testing recently of the waters here, and also some fish samples. But I'm very frustrated because our government here doesn't consider it a problem, and they're not doing the testing I think that needs to be done. The second thing that the Obama administration did last year is that they dramatically increased the amount of so-called acceptable radiation that people can be exposed to 1,200 becquerels of radiation per kilogram or per liter, either in fish or in water. I believe that's the highest in the world. Canada has 1,000 becquerels. Japan has far lower standards. I wish something could be done about the testing situation here, because it's just not being done. Private citizens are doing
it. Well, it's imperative, because it's imperative that the air testing be continued because of what I just explained, that there could be some massive releases of radiation in the near future or in years to come, should a big earthquake strike the Fukushima zone. Mm-hmm. And also, the plume of radiation is about to hit the west coast of the U.S. and will continue for, you know, probably, I have to say, decades, but maybe hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. And not just the water becoming radioactive. The most important thing about it is that the food chain, as I described, bio-concentrates the radiation. And Ken Bessler, who I know quite well and have great respect for, is urging the government to test the water and to test the fish, which they're not. Now, when you say, well, you know, why isn't the government doing it and et cetera, you live in a democracy. And therefore, your elected representatives are not your leaders. You are their leaders. They represent you. And therefore, it is incumbent upon you and your responsibility to educate your elected representatives. So when they come home to their districts, you go and you educate them and find some doctors to do it as well and say, unless you represent us and do the right thing, you won't be elected next time. The only way a democracy can function is if people use their democracy. And living in a democracy denotes responsibility, and it doesn't mean voting once every few years. In Australia, voting is compulsory, incidentally. It means, you know, being your own leaders and making sure your representatives, including the president, represent you and not the corporation. So living in a democracy is a lot of hard work, and I've been doing that for 43 years in various democracies, and I think people need to accept that cloak of responsibility, take it on, and lead.
Well, I thank you so much for that excellent advice, Dr. Caldicott. I myself recently contacted Dr. John Wiseman, who is the director of Washington's Public Health Department here in Washington. No plans for testing. I've tried to educate him, sent some emails, materials. I hope he does do the right thing. I've contacted Washington Governor Jay Inslee's office here in Washington State about the testing issue. So far, no response, but I'm hoping that that he will respond. And for my listeners out there in the Seattle area, I strongly urge you to contact Governor Inslee at his office in Olympia and also the director of our public health, John Wiseman, in Olympia. They do respond, and I think it's, Dr. Caldicott, you are absolutely right. It's our job as citizens, as the people who vote our leaders in, for them to to take the appropriate actions needed to protect us. Currently, nothing is...
I think you actually need to take to make appointments and go and see them personally and talk to them. You know, get half an hour of their time. Just sending an email won't work. Sending a letter won't work because it's very easy to shrug that off.
Mm-hmm.
But if you approach them and face to face and talk to them in a respectful way and educate them and take along educated people who know what they're talking about, like physicians, then you'll get much, much further. And don't just do it once. You know, you need to be persistent. As Ray Kroc, who founded McDonald's Hamburgers, once said, persistence always pays, and I think that's correct.
A very, very good point. Just last week, I filed a statewide initiative in Olympia to require the state to do testing. I'm looking for support now, so please contact me at my website at www.outofthisworld1150.com. If you'd like to provide some assistance, I do need all the help I can get on this. Dr. Caldicott, have there been any international efforts to help the Japanese, or what has then been their response from what you know?
Yeah, look, I've just been there in Japan lecturing in six cities. The Japanese are very proud people. They have a feudalistic system. They don't like to admit that they're wrong. They feel terrible shame, which is why they bow all the time. There have been attempts by international organizations to intervene and help them, but they have refused. The United Nations, actually representing the people of the world, should be insisting that Japan receive help. For instance, if Bechtel, which builds nuclear power plants, I don't like Bechtel, but it's a very powerful engineering company, once run by George Shultz, I think, if they were invited by Japan to come in and help and have a round table and discuss what to do about the situation, that would be extremely helpful, but the Japanese government would have to pay. TEPCO's out of money. It's been, it's now nationalized, TEPCO, Tokyo Electric Car Company, which is running the situation, but they are an organization of operators. They press switches and buttons. They are not nuclear engineers. So they are not getting the right advice. And the whole world, you know, as I explained in a way, is at risk if these things blow again. And it's an issue of global public health. So therefore, everybody needs to get involved. Now, you might say, well, why doesn't the WHO get involved, World Health Organization? Well, unfortunately, the WHO signed an agreement in 1959 with the International Atomic Energy Agency, whose mission is to promote nuclear power, saying that the WHO would not investigate any nuclear accidents unless the IAEA agrees. consequently, it's never investigated on the ground the results of Chernobyl nor Fukushima. And this is really extremely irresponsible. So the United Nations has abrogated its responsibility in this regard. And people of the world need to know about that, and things need to be done to correct the situation.
I couldn't agree with you more, Dr. Caldicott. I did, about 2 weeks ago, I did contact the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Association, and...
Agency.
Yes. I'm sorry, agency. And I said, I told them about this radio program that you were coming on, and they said, oh, we don't like Dr. Caldicott. And I said, why not? And... No, the lady was very honest, and she said, well, we think she's just she's an alarmist. And I said, well, she's been nominated twice for the Nobel Peace Prize. That says something, doesn't it?
No, only once I've been nominated.
Okay. Well, okay. Well, who's counting? But at any rate, but still, the attitude I had was kind of a strange attitude. I also contacted the United Nations Environmental Program. I think they're based in Nairobi, but I contacted their New York representative, and they said that they had abdicated responsibility, as you said, to another agency. So they did not want to get, it's funny, but they did not want to get directly involved.
Yeah, well, the UN rapporteur, I can't remember his name, Anand Grover, mm-hmm. who's sort of in charge of humanitarian aspects of the UN, has made several profound statements about Fukushima and the attitude of the Japanese not looking after their people and not examining them properly and the like. So, from that perspective, the UN has stepped in, but from another perspective, they have not. I always like it when the IAEA doesn't like me. It's like being on Nixon's blacklist. It's sort of a sign of respect in a way. I'm not an alarmist. I'm a physician. And, you know, you could say that if I told you you had pancreatic cancer and you might die in 6 months, but these are the treatments, you could call me an alarmist. But, however, we do have to tell our patients the truth. We're obliged to do that. It's our medical responsibility. And often the truth is very alarming from a medical perspective.
Well, you're absolutely right. I found their comments very kind of almost hilarious. I wanted to give out the phone numbers here at the station for those who'd like to call in and ask Dr. Caldicott any questions. The phone number here in the studio is 425-373-5527, or toll-free within Western Washington is 1-888-298-5569. Let's take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back in about 2 minutes with Dr. Caldicott. Hello, friends. I'd like to introduce you to one of the best mystics and psychotherapists we have in the area, wonderful person named Jackie Conquest. Jackie, why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Well, hello. My name is Jacqueline Conquest, and I also started a show here on KKNW. It's the first Thursday of every month at 8 a.m. on the Chat with Women Network, and it's called Jacqueline Conquest, Mystic and Psychotherapist.
What kinds of work do you do?
Well, I have been in my private practice for over 30 years. I'm a licensed mental health counselor, so I do couples and individuals and children, family therapy. But what I really find so profoundly shape-shifting for folks is because I'm a clinical certified hypnotherapist, so I do the deeper work of not only the subconscious mind, you know, and helping those to find their real understanding with it, you know, reconnecting to their higher self and trusting their intuition, but also the energy work where, like, in a few minutes if someone's feeling depressed, then I can help them to release the depression and to reconnect to their higher self and then feel empowered and to feel free. So I kind of, let's put it this way, one of a testimony I had from a client who came into session one day, this was many, many years ago, and she was on antidepressants. And I started seeing her, and one day she comes back, and of course she'd been so jazzed because she'd didn't need to take the antidepressants anymore. And so anyway, she'd seen her doctor and he was baffled. And she told me, I tried to explain to my doctor what you do. And all he said was, it's magic, just magic.
Mm. So. Well, maybe that's the best explanation for it, Jackie.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. That's great. Well, listeners, Jackie's really good at what she does. And if you have any kinds of those kinds of issues, please do get a hold of her. How do people get a hold of you, Jackie?
My number is 206-303-9482. That's 206-303-9482. And then my website is Jacqueline Conquest, and Conquest is spelled just like conquering something. Mm-hmm. Jacqueline Conquest Mystic.com, and there's a contact page on there, and it talks all about what I do and, you know, insurances. I can also, you know, take insurances and whatnot.
Okay, wonderful. Well, listeners, please do contact Jackie if you have any needs for this kind of work. I think she's fantastic. She's
a beautiful
person, and I know you'll be happy with her work.
Thank you.
News, traffic, and weather. Now you can get your information fixed weekdays on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back. For those who were just tuning in, this is the Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Marr, on KKNW, 1150 AM here in Bellevue, Washington. We are very grateful and honored to have as our guest today is Dr. Helen Caldicott, live from Sydney, Australia. For those who'd like to call in, our phone number here is area code 425-373-5527 or toll-free at 1-888-298-5569. Dr. Caldicott, what are the Japanese doing now as far as the radiation exposure? How are they protecting their people, or how can you protect yourself against radiation exposure?
Oh, it's a good question. You can't. You can't taste radioactive elements in your food. You can't smell them and you can't see them. So they're invisible, silent killers. Mm. The Japanese government is encouraging Fukushima farmers to grow their food again, selling it in the Tokyo markets. They're feeding radioactive food to kindergarten children, distributing it. It's being sold in London. I have heard that some of their most radioactive food they're canning and sending it to other countries. I also know that Hillary Clinton signed an agreement with the Japanese government just after the accident that America would continue to import Japanese food. I warn you, do not eat Japanese food. Miso, rice, fish, seaweed, or anything else, because you don't know what food is radioactive and what is not unless it's put into a spectrometer and you find out what elements are in it. The Japanese government is, there's an edict that went out to many Japanese doctors not to inform patients that their symptoms could be related to radiation. The Fukushima Medical Center, plus, I think the IAEA is building a huge cancer hospital in Fukushima, so that indicates they know what is going to happen.
Sure.
They are just only testing children's thyroids in Fukushima Prefecture with ultrasound. 47% of them have either nodules or cysts, which is highly unusual, and as I said, up to 75 probably got thyroid cancer, and that's just the beginning. They are not doing urine analysis of children or people to see if they're excreting radioactive elements, nor blood tests to see if they have been impacted by radiation. In other words, their immune mechanisms, such as their white blood cells, may be depressed. They are not looking at any other cancers, as far as I know, and all cancers can be caused by radiation, not just thyroid cancers, but the IAEA only accepts thyroid cancer as a result of radiation. Mm-hmm. They do not keep a registry of congenital abnormalities so that you can't compare what's happening now with what happened in the past before the accident. They are encouraging people to return to very high radiation areas which were from which they retreated during the accident. And so these people are going to be exposed to 2 REMs a year. That's external radiation, like gamma radiation, coming off from the elements on the ground. It's called ground shine. But that does not include the radioactive food these people are going to be eating, mm-hmm. which will irradiate their organs for years to come. It's it's interesting because the Russian government, in fact, was much more proactive during the Chernobyl catastrophe than the Japanese have been. It seemed like the Soviet Union was more concerned for their people, per se, than the Japanese government. Mm-hmm. So the whole thing is really medically, it's a catastrophe, one that I have rarely seen in my medical career.
Dr. Caldicott, what kinds of things did the Soviet government do for their people for Chernobyl that the Japanese have not done for Fukushima?
Well, what they did was evacuate a lot of people from the very high radiation zone, mm-hmm. and the Japanese government did not. The other thing the Japanese government did was they didn't want to tell the people where the high radiation zones were. They didn't want to create panic. That's very Japanese, no panic. So the people evacuated into the very path of the very highest radiation areas, which was just obscene. And the Japanese knew where they were, and so did the Americans. They were monitoring it with airplanes. And so hundreds of thousands, if not millions, were irradiated. Actually, 10 million people now still live in very high radiation zones, zones that... the Soviet Union evacuated many people, as many people as they could. I'd refer you to two books. One is my book, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer, which explains all that I'm talking about in lay language from a medical perspective, so you'll understand how cancer is caused by radiation and genetic diseases and the like. Mm-hmm. And the other book is a very powerful book, which is a collection of over 5,000 papers written in Russian, translated into English by epidemiologists, physicians and the like throughout the Soviet Union and Europe. And it's published by the New York Academy of Sciences, and it's called Chernobyl. It is one of the scariest books I've ever read as a physician, and it details many of the illnesses that were a result of Chernobyl, i.e. children born with small heads, with low IQs. Severe congenital anomalies. There are homes full of very, very deformed children around Chernobyl. Diabetes increased. Sudden heart attacks increased. Premature aging in children increased, so that a 9-year-old would have, you know, high blood pressure and the like of a 50-year-old man. Thyroid hypo and hyperthyroidism, thyroid cancers, and cancers of every other organ were described. What else? Lung disease, and I can't remember all the others, but there are many, many diseases that are caused by exposure to radioactive materials after a meltdown. And incidentally, there aren't just a few elements like cesium and strontium and tritium and xenon. A reactor contains about 200 radioactive elements, some which last seconds and some last millions of years, mm-hmm. and are in the environment and in bodies and food and plants and animals for that period of time. And most of these elements have not been examined from a biological perspective to see where they go in the food chain and where they go in human bodies. So we're dealing with a very inexact science. And the incidence of cancer is rising. We know that, partly because of the fallout from all the nuclear testing, partly from the fact we're exposed to over 80,000 chemicals in common use every day, most of which have not been tested for carcinogenicity. And these chemicals react synergistically with radioactive elements. In other words, you know, one and one doesn't equal two to form a cancer. Mm-hmm. Both of them acting together synergistically, you could have 10 times the chance of getting cancer. Mm-hmm. So we live in a dangerous world. However, lifespans are increasing. But we mustn't make it more dangerous, and we must understand the basic elements of medicine and biology, which most politicians have no idea about. Most politicians are scientifically and medically illiterate, mm-hmm. which is why we therefore must educate them. Otherwise, they fall into the hands of the multinationals, and we all know what happens then.
You know, in the mainstream press here in the United States, Helen, if they have if there's a nuclear accident, for example, at a facility, they always say, almost always say, just a little bit of radiation went out, and people were exposed to acceptable limits or below the standard of the acceptable risk. The problem
there are no acceptable limits. There is no acceptable limits of radiation. All radiation is dangerous, even chest x-rays, teeth x-rays. You must never get your teeth x-rayed every year. That's absolutely wicked. If you've got a sore tooth, yeah, you need an x-ray. But, you know, radiologists make a lot of money. My ex-husband was a radiologist, I know. Each dose of radiation you receive adds to your risk of getting cancer. It's cumulative. If you have pneumonia, you need a chest x-ray because the risk is minimal and the benefit is great of a diagnosis and treatment. But CT scans give you a hell of a lot of radiation. Don't have them unless it's absolutely necessary and they suspect you have cancer in your body. Just be judicious. Don't walk through those x-ray machines in airports. Fetuses are thousands of times more sensitive than adults to radiation. One x-ray to a pregnant abdomen doubles the incidence of leukemia in that baby.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we're talking about a heterogeneous population. Old people are more sensitive to radiation than middle-aged people. Children are 10 to 20 times more sensitive. Little girls are twice as sensitive as little boys. We don't know why. Women are more sensitive than men. In other words, they get cancer more readily. And the nuclear industry takes as a standard person a 70-kilogram, 25-year-old white male and takes that as a standard and then derives from that what anyone, the dose anyone can receive, including fetuses. So the nuclear industry sets standards by which it can operate, which means it's going to irradiate people. And incidentally, people living near nuclear reactors are continually subjected to radiation exposures from tritium that's continuously released in the air and water, carbon-14 and other elements. And in fact, several really excellent studies have shown that children under the age of 5 living within 5K of a nuclear reactor have double the incidence of leukemia and a high incidence of solid cancers. So even a normally operating reactor is dangerous.
Sure. One thing I wanted to mention, friends, is that we just missed a call. The call-in number here, please call back, is 425-373-5527, or toll-free within Western Washington. The number here is 1-888-298-5569. Does Australia have nuclear power, Helen?
No, I've done a lot of education in Australia. Mm-hmm. We think it's too dangerous for us. We just export uranium so everyone else can have the joys of nuclear power that I've just been explaining. But the uranium in the Fukushima reactors was Australian uranium. So we're going to be responsible for hundreds of thousands of deaths.
Oh, my goodness. We have a caller on line one. Just a moment, yeah. One last question I wanted to ask you, Helen, before we go to the caller. If you could put a wand over the world, would you convene an international conference sponsored by the United Nations on Fukushima? What would you do to get people together?
Yes, the thing about it is that I know the American government is pressuring the Japanese government to open its nuclear reactors, which are all shut. So I'd like to be president of the United States, then I could fix it. Japan follows the United States.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, your country is determining the fate of the Earth, both from global warming, from nuclear power, radioactive waste, and nuclear war. And I just want to warn you that because of what's happening now in the Crimea and the Ukraine and the neocons and the Tea Party people in the Congress who are agitating for war, you've got over 1,000 hydrogen bombs ready to be launched with a press of a button by Obama. They take half an hour to get to Russia. Russia's got a similar number, taking half an hour to get to you. You've got about 20 hydrogen bombs targeted on New York as I speak. Certainly in Washington State, Puget Sound, where the Trident docks, you would have several H-bombs targeted there and quite a few on Seattle because that's where Boeing is, and Boeing is the second largest military industrial organization in America or indeed the world. And this could happen tonight by accident, by high anxiety, by a person making a mistake, by computer error, by someone hacking into the early warning system. Everyone lives in a state of absolute denial with the nuclear with nuclear war hanging over their heads, twisting slowly in the wind. I don't actually know how we're still surviving why there hasn't been a nuclear war so far. But the people in Congress talk as if they can still fight wars when they're riding on horses and with bows and arrows. They have no idea that extermination could occur tonight by a press of a button.
Well, let's, Helen, that's a very sobering thought. Let's go to our first caller. It's Ron in Silverdale. You're on the air.
Yes. I would like to make a statement that I have hypothyroidism. I'm a child of the 50s, and I was led to a website called downwinders.com. And you will see from the Nevada testing how it flooded over the United States, and only Congress has chosen to choose people in Texas in a small group, about 1 in 800,000, to give compensation to. Again, it is downwinders.com, and you'll see how the nuclear testing in Nevada spread over Texas, Kansas, New York, everything. It's quite scary.
You're right. I think the National Cancer Institute estimated that about 114,000 extra thyroid cancers were caused by nuclear testing in Nevada. But, of course, that's only thyroid cancer. There are lots of other cancers that almost certainly were induced by the nuclear testing. Really,
and it's documented on that website. I don't know who put the website up, but I have talked to people about it.
Yes. Yeah, downwinders. It's very important.
All right.
They, incidentally, they only tested the bombs in Nevada when the wind was blowing towards St. George's and the Mormon community, because they knew that those people were so patriotic they would complain. But almost every family in St. George's had a child with leukemia or someone with cancer. So it was a dreadful, dreadful situation. And the physicists knew what they were doing. They were, in fact, murdering people.
Well, I know a little bit about downwinders. Helen, my foster mother, was a downwinder herself. She had thyroid problems her whole life, and so did her mother as well. They were downwind when the atomic tests were being done in the 50s, so I'm well versed with the issue. I guess the most important issue, friends, out there is to become informed, to contact our elected representatives, to try to turn around things as they're happening here in the United States. Certainly we can contact President Obama and ask him to reduce, to take the steps necessary to start testing the air and water off the Pacific here. They have the equipment. They've got the scientists. They have the paid people to do it. It's just they've been ordered not to. I've talked to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency here in Seattle. They do what their headquarters tell them in Washington, D.C., and they've been specifically told not to do any testing. So they don't, even if they are sympathetic.
Maybe you should give out the telephone number again, because maybe some more people have questions.
Yes, of course. Yes. Our phone number here is area code 425-373-5527, or toll-free within Western Washington. Our number here is 1-888-298-5569. I was going to ask you quickly, too, Dr. Caldicott, has the radiation from Fukushima affected waters around Australia yet?
No. But, you know, fish swim thousands of miles, and they've been catching tuna, bluefin tuna, off the coast of California that contains cesium from Fukushima. So they obviously swam over to California from Fukushima. So they could swim south. And I live in a little fishing village on the Pacific Ocean in Australia. And, you don't know which fish are going to be radioactive or not. Mm-hmm. The currents of the ocean, the Pacific Ocean, which is vast, will eventually circle around to the east coast of Australia. But the really worrying aspect is that there's no end in sight. You know, 300 to 400 tons of highly radioactive water every day being released into the Pacific. It's for, you know, I don't know, tens, hundreds of years, really. And no one will be able to get to those radioactive molten cores. They're so radioactive, even if they send robots down, they almost melt. Mm-hmm. It's lethal. So, and no one has ever dealt with a situation like this before, mm-hmm. with three absolute meltdowns. No one's ever had to deal with it. In fact, the nuclear industry, they never even contemplated there could be three meltdowns all at once. So it's a catastrophe, and it's a sort of catastrophe that the nuclear physicists never really contemplated because they thought it was very highly unlikely. And it's like, you know, what if there's a nuclear war? Well, of course, no one will be around to record it in history. But, you know, they built all these nuclear weapons, set them up ready to go, and then decided that it was deterrence and no one would use them because they were so dreadful. But what if they are used? They're all ready to go with the press of the button.
That's true. That's true. Last year, President Obama authorized the building of new nuclear reactors in the state of Georgia, I believe on the Savannah River. People couldn't understand it. My friends and I couldn't understand it because no nuclear power plants have been ordered for at least several decades. There are, of course, nuclear reactors built here in the United States, which are built on fault lines and also right next to the ocean. There's Diablo Canyon in California, which is a beautiful scenic area, but once again, it's right on the ocean. And I believe it's either on a fault line.
And a fault line, yes.
Correct. And just...
Well, let me just say one other thing.
Mm-hmm.
Global warming is antithetical to nuclear power because with global warming, the oceans are going to rise and many reactors are at sea level. And with catastrophic storms like Hurricane Sandy and the like, the control rooms of the reactors could be flooded and there could be meltdowns because of that. Mm-hmm. Now, in Europe, a lot of reactors are built on rivers. The rivers are becoming really hot in the summer, too hot to cool the reactors. Each reactor needs 1 million gallons a minute of cooling water to keep it cool so it can mm-hmm. be operable.
Mm-hmm.
And also the water is drying up in those rivers and lakes because of global warming and drought. Also, with great hurricanes, you can lose electricity supply, and that's what happened at Fukushima. They lost their external electricity supply. There's a power outage. So, therefore, the pumps that run the 1 million gallons of water per minute for each of the six reactors failed. Now, in a case like that, they have emergency diesel generators, but these were built in the basement of the Fukushima reactors. And when the tsunami came in, the diesel generators were flooded and they ceased to work. And so within hours, those three reactors began to melt down. Within hours. Mm-hmm. The heat is so intense mm-hmm. from the decay of the radioactive product. They just melt into a sort of molten, larval, radioactive mass. Mm-hmm. So global warming is antithetical to nuclear power, and all reactors should be closed down tonight. And if I were the President of the United States, I'd do that. But unfortunately, Obama's taken at least $250,000 from Exelon, which has 13 reactors around Chicago, to get elected. And some of the people who are high up in Exelon are his friends and advisors. So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wheels within right. wheels, revolving right. doors in revolving doors.
Well, for those who
need a president who knows what they're doing and who is well educated and cares only for the health and well-being, not just of the American people, but of the people of the world,
mm-hmm.
then we
mm-hmm.
might get somewhere.
Well, I think we all need to come together at some point and try to help the Japanese. And I think your suggestion of getting Bechtel involved in maybe just sitting down with a roundtable with the Japanese and TEPCO and trying to solve Fukushima would be wonderful. Clearly, the Japanese can't handle it on their own. They don't have the money to do it. And it's not just a Japanese problem either, as you so rightly and profoundly indicated, Dr. Caldicott. It's actually a worldwide problem because the radiation that's being dumped into the Pacific every day now at 85,000 gallons a day or 350 to 400 tons of radioactive water every day, eventually that's going to be in all the world's oceans. And eventually that stuff evaporates, becomes into the atmosphere. So all radiation's local, even if Chernobyl's radiation went worldwide as well. And I think we need to be proactive on this. And for those who are interested in starting a campaign to help the Japanese and to do radiation testing, please, by all means, contact me on the program at www.outofthisworld1150.com or email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. My toll-free number, where you can also contact me, is 1-888-879-2. 1-888-379-8339. Again, that's 1-888-879-8339. And Dr. Caldicott, I'd also like to thank you for your wonderful work for all these years. You were the founder of the organization Physicians for Responsibility, Social Responsibility. We have a chapter here in Seattle, a very wonderful group of medical doctors dedicated and health professionals dedicated to informing the public of the hazards of nuclear energy and nuclear radiation. We have about a minute left, Dr. Caldicott, and I'd just like to give you the last few remaining seconds to wrap up the show, whatever you'd like to say.
Well, okay. Well, I'll say if you love your children and if you really love your grandchildren, you will now dedicate your lives to making sure they have a future. At the moment, they do not. It's going to be 6 degrees centigrade hotter by the end of this century if we do nothing about global warming. And they can't survive at those temperatures. They have no future. If you love them enough, you will make sure that America stops burning coal and oil and moves remarkably fast to renewable energy. You will make sure that all the nuclear reactors are closed down in America, and you'll make sure that America leads the world towards abolition of nuclear weapons. Now, that sounds big. It is. But I led that movement in America in 1978, recruiting 23,000 physicians, and we taught the American people about the medical consequences of nuclear war, which went global and led the end of the Cold War, me and millions of others, of course.
Thank you so much, Helen. Have a wonderful day, my friend. Thank you for coming on the air with us.
You won't find a thing to chew. Nobody's gonna look at you.